Welcome to The Goodnight Show. I'm Shay Morrison, sleep expert and co-founder of The Goodnight Co. Join me each week for hints and tips on all things sleep. Hello and welcome back to The Goodnight Show. As a mother, when either of my children start to show signs of illness or reason for alarm, I want to jump to figure out a solution straight away. This was the case when my daughter Molly showed signs of disrupted breathing while sleeping. Interestingly, disrupted breathing while sleeping is a lot more common than you think. And it's not just an old man syndrome. Our guest on this episode, Tash from Sound Asleep Baby, began the research behind sleep-disordered breathing when she had similar issues with one of her children and has since found it comes in many forms. During this episode, Tash explains her top three tips as an expert and parent herself on what parents should do if they believe that their child is showing signs of sleep-disordered breathing and why it's best to jump on the issue as quick as you can. One of the areas I was most surprised by was the impact sleep-disordered breathing can have on children's behaviour. So if you're a mum, grandmother, carer, even a teacher of children, have a listen. Tash, how well did you sleep last night? I love asking this question and I love people to be honest.
Right. So I would say I slept fairly well. I did have a little point where I was awake having a little, you know, ruminate as a small business owner at what time, I'm not sure because I refuse to look at the clock because otherwise I get anxious. But yeah, so I slept, you know, a good probably 10 to 5 past 5 with a little bit of a wake time in the night. But I guess based on the topic that we're going to be talking about today, I will touch on briefly that I, as an adult, still suffer from sleep-disordered breathing, I guess probably because it was unrecognised when I was a little kid and probably should have had something done about it then. So I mouth breathe when I sleep, not all the time, but intermittent. So, yeah, affects my sleep quality. And I would suggest that, you know, as we said, small business owner, lots to think about when I'm getting into those light sleeps. It's really easy to fully wake and lie there and find it hard to get back to sleep.
Okay, well, I'd love to come into that and talk about that a little bit more. First of all, what I'd love to do is for you to introduce yourself and just to explain to our lovely listeners a little bit about who you are and your business, Sound Asleep Baby, to really just set it up so that people can get a really great understanding of all the great work that you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Tash. I'm an occupational therapist and I work with infant and early childhood sleep. So essentially kind of when I had my own kids, you know, sleep deprivation was one of the hardest things and I wanted to learn all about it. And in my first baby, I read all the hundreds of books that there is and there was this big thing like, why do I do that? Why are you telling me to do that? Why should I do that? Coming from a health science background.
Yeah, I understand and that. It is the why.
like tell me why. What's the science? And then after my second baby, I discovered that there is a whole sleep science and hormones and all this amazing stuff. It's like, wow, that's really interesting. So then I trained in, you know, that kind of, I guess, what people would know as a sleep consultant, so that kind of whole traditional sleep training kind of thing. However, then I went on and had my third baby, and I had always slept well in inverted commas in terms of quantity but not quality, which we'll get to
just quickly on that. So with the quality sleep, what did you identify in her that you knew that she wasn't getting good quality sleep? Because a lot of people could just put their babies to bed and just assume that because they didn't wake up necessarily during the night or, you know, whatever, that they were getting good sleep. So what did you discover in that process?
Both of them slept a lot. So I don't tend to get those people as my clients because their babies are sleeping well, in inverted commas, but they slept a lot. So more than I would expect for their age, particularly my son, my middle child, he would be asleep for 12 hours at night and wake up Mr. Cranky Pants. So he never seemed refreshed. So with that, you know, I met a whole lot of professionals going through that journey with my own children. And then I thought, hang on, this sleep training is not addressing the core problem with these kids. And so then I've also done some feeding training as well, so that I basically, because sleep and feeding are so linked, and essentially I use a feeding assessment to screen for symptoms of sleep disordered breathing, along with obviously sleep stuff. But kids that have trouble eating often have trouble sleeping. And there's a big crossover, you know, in terms of airways. If a little kid has big adenoids and tonsils, or big tonsils, when they're going to, you know, if you're meant to be chewing meat with your mouth closed and breathing through your nose, if you can't do that, you're just going to choose not to, and your breathing is always going to win. Yeah, so that's, I guess that's how I started on this whole traditional sleep training, but then the further I got into it, I was like, that's not enough. For some kids without significant issues, some, you know, routine sleep hygiene, behavioural stuff is important, but basically behavioural sleep training in the presence of an underlying physiological condition is like, oh, I can a band-aid over a big wound and just like, oh, here we go, I hope that holds. Yeah. Might hold for a little bit, but maybe not very long.
Yeah. And so in your in your clinic, what, you know, how many patients are you seeing, and why would somebody, so how would people come to choosing to come and see you?
So I'm really big on education. I try and educate where I can, and like avenues like this, and social media and websites and newspaper, all this type of stuff, just so even if it's just planting a little seed in a parent's brain of like, oh, maybe that's why my child isn't sleeping, and why I've done all this, you know. Unfortunately, I see little ones that have done these, you know, those hospital stays where they'll stay 5 days or 3 days, and they just seem to get nowhere. And so, yeah, I guess people find me through avenues like this, or
word of mouth,
traditional media, word of mouth.
Yeah, and so the reason why I'm really interested in this topic is so I see a holistic dentist, Dr. David Cowig, in Brisbane, and it's a topic that's very close to his heart. It's something that he's really big on. And my daughter, while she sleeps, has always slept really well, she certainly probably wasn't getting the quality sleep, which was identified for me through dark circles under her eyes, a bit of puffiness. And also, if you lie next to her, you know that she's a really restless, noisy sleeper. And, you know, so in seeing David and understanding about mouth breathing, encouraging breath, breathing through your nose, it was identified that she had enlarged adenoids, which we had removed. And I must say that whilst it has certainly made, that has made a difference, there is a process of retraining the breath and becoming a nose breather instead of a mouth breather. You know, there's lots of different therapies, obviously, that you would know about around, you know, taping, mouth taping. I don't know what your take is on that. Obviously, it's doing it with absolute guidance by obviously an ENT or somebody who knows what they're doing. But, you know, for me, I've certainly been somebody on and off that has sometimes been a mouth breather, but not really. But I definitely can identify the difference of quality of my sleep if I'm lying on my back and I am mouth breathing.
Yeah, absolutely.
If people were listening to this podcast and they were thinking about maybe some things that spikes them, thinking, oh, my child doesn't seem very well refreshed, or they might have some emotional outbursts or ongoing behavioral issues, or any of the symptoms that I guess come up with it, what would you suggest? Like, what should people be looking for, and what should they be doing about it?
Because sleep disordered breathing exists along a spectrum. So there's, at one end, there's quiet open mouth breathing. At the other end, well, there's even something beyond it, but there's obstructive sleep apnea. But along that whole spectrum is sleep disordered breathing. And that means that the quality of your sleep, because of the inefficiency of your breathing, is affected, no matter where you are along that. So often I hear that families have been asked, does your child snore? No? Okay, there's no problem. But, I mean, I can tell you from personal experience with my kids, but also my clients, that snoring is not the only thing to look for. First and foremost, that open mouth rest posture when they're breathing, but it doesn't have to be snoring. The restless sleep, sweaty sleep, night terrors, bedwetting beyond age-appropriate time, teeth grinding, and then different things within the day. So your emotional regulation, have troubles with emotional regulation or behaviour, or that waking unrefreshed, those, as you mentioned, those dark circles under the eyes.
Puffiness,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. And like if your child seems to just always be sick, but like not, you know, like it doesn't seem like an acute virus kind of thing, but that they always sound really nasally and they just constantly drooling. Yeah, yep. And I guess drool on the pillow is another sign as well when they're asleep, because if you're drooling, your mouth's got to be open. But yeah, like excessive drooling early on, problems with breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And like if your baby is constantly popping on or off the breast or the bottle to literally gasp for air, that tells me they're not coordinating that suck, swallow, breathe. Mm. And also, again, linking back into food, if you have significant troubles with food and it's not fussiness but actually a physiological underlying, like I can't breathe when I'm eating and it's hard for me to chew chewy stuff, so I'm just going to choose not to. So like that preference for really soft, easy to chew and swallow food. So try like avoiding meat and stuff like that, and like even like uncooked carrot, lots of kids will like bite it, give it a bit of a chew, too much to swallow, and then spit it back out, that type of thing. So there's a whole bunch of different symptoms, and it's not just snoring.
Yeah.
So I guess it would be trying to collect a bit of a picture when you're going to see, like as in a representation of your child as a whole, when you go to see that first health professional. And I always say take videos or photos, with videos preferably, just as easy these days, to your doctor, particularly if you're seeing any snoring or any apnea episodes, because once they see it, then you know, like there's a clear path that we need to investigate that further.
If people are experiencing some of these symptoms with their children, are you suggesting, what is that first step then, that they are taking those videos, that they're observing it, they're writing notes, and then they're going to see their GP, their health professional first as a first point of call?
And so yes, definitely start at GP. Like with anything, sometimes it's difficult to get across the impact. So my advice is just if you feel in your gut that there's something, like you can feel like your kid is not getting good quality sleep, find someone else that will listen to you.
Yeah.
And it essentially comes down to not all health professionals can be expert in everything. It's just not possible. So unless you just happen to stumble across someone that first time that has a real interest in it, then you might have to go through a couple of health professionals. Like I can't remember the exact stat, but they did a study on, I think, 400 medical schools across the world, and they spent about over their whole degree something like 19 minutes on pediatric sleep. So that there's always, keep that in the back of your mind. If you get a great GP first up, amazing, but just because you don't get a referral onward, or you know like it's not identified early on, if you feel like something's not right, keep going. And luckily these days there's, like you mentioned, the holistic dentist.
Yeah.
So you could always go that path. Yep. There's also myofunctional therapist. So there's different paths that you can kind of go down these days, but keep going.
And I think for anyone that is listening, you know, if you do have a child that from either a baby through to a toddler that you're observing, and you think that behavior is out, things don't stack up, they are fussy eaters, you can notice that there is some grinding going on, or you're observing different things, it's definitely worth going and just getting it checked out, I guess, is where we're kind of going with this. So if you can go to your GP, as Tash is saying, you know, don't get the answers that you want first time, try somebody else, and or go down the holistic dentist path, because that there's certainly a lot of great holistic dentists these days that are doing training in this space, because not only are there longer term repercussions when it comes to food, behavior, you know, just general fatigue, and that can cause other longer term problems, is that from a mouth formation, jaw, teeth, which is so important. I'm somebody who has not great teeth, so for me it's really close to my heart, is that, you know, if you're somebody, particularly from a hereditary point of view as well, is that if you are somebody whose jaw doesn't form quite the way that you want it, you've got a lot of overcrowding going on in your mouth, you are a clencher or a grinder, you know, often this can be all part of what is going on. And if you can catch it early enough, you can prevent this from being a problem later, because children are so pliable. So we can very easily change these behaviors in the younger age groups. So it is definitely something to go and consider. And even if you're going to your dentist, ask them about it and just double check on what's going on with enlarged tonsils and adenoids as well.
Yeah. And I guess that's another thing to touch on. Like if you're, child, if you can see that there's no spacing between their teeth,
yes,
that's probably an indicator that they've got a narrow jaw. So, and then the narrow jaw, the high palate, all that kind of stuff is, head to dentist if you're noticing that. And if you're at the dentist with your child, then definitely ask them about it. Because, yeah, that whole facial development, it's, you know, like that, I guess it's the concept, if you don't use it, you lose it. So if you're not nose breathing, then your whole face can change based on how you breathe. And, yeah, the kids' jaws are growing and developing, much more easy to affect change early on than once at this age.
Absolutely. And now it's time for a quick break. Are you having trouble falling asleep? Calm your busy mind and drift off with the Goodnight Co. Deep Sleep Drops. Using a combination of naturally derived ingredients, our Deep Sleep Drops have been scientifically formulated to help you naturally achieve a deep, restful sleep. Just 8 drops under the tongue before bed can help you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer. We're offering you 20% off your next purchase of our Deep Sleep Drops with the discount code podcast20. Try them today, available at thegoodnightco.com.au. And just coming back, you know, being a mouth breather versus a nose breather, there are so many benefits in, well, we need to be breathing through our noses. So if we want to contain, you know, sorry, not contain, but to maintain, when it even comes down to posture or being able to calm our nervous system, coming from a nostril breathing space, not from a mouth breathing space. So there is absolute element in the, you know, the fidgety behavioral side of things is also so highly linked into that space. So if you, you know, if you're getting feedback or you're noticing that your child is a fidgeter and can't sit still, that's likely that's behavior that's going on in the classroom that's also maybe turning into some not desired behavior. So maybe Tash, you can explain a bit more. It's not my expertise here around the behavioral link to what we're talking about.
Yeah, sure. So there's one statistic that nose breathing delivers 18% more oxygen to your brain than mouth breathing. So one of the main mechanisms of that is that when you nose breathe, you release nitric oxide in those nasal passages. So when that increases the oxygen uptake and promotes optimal gas exchange in the lungs. When we mouth breathe, we don't do that. So obviously we're still getting the air in, but it's not as richly oxygenated, and the gas exchange in the lungs isn't as targeted because of the absence of that nitric oxide. Essentially, you know, like there's so many systemic benefits to nose breathing or downfalls to mouth breathing. But, you know, when you look at essentially that the brain detects that the oxygenation isn't quite spot on or quite as good as it could be, you your sympathetic nervous system is more likely to be activated. So when we go to sleep, and I'll come back to behavior, but when we're sleeping, we really want the parasympathetic nervous system to be activated, where we rest and digest. But when the sympathetic nervous system is activated, we're fight flight, and then you have cortisol and all that kind of stuff going on. So you're kind of in that constant state of fight flight because the oxygenation is a little bit off. So coming back to that comment about the fidgety behaviour, there's research to say between 25 and even as high as 50% of kids diagnosed with ADHD may actually have a concurrent sleep disorder underlying that diagnosis. High, yeah. Not to say that ADHD isn't a diagnosis 100% is, but to say that some kids might actually just be might only have a sleep disordered breathing issue whereby they are just exhausted all the time. It's presenting like ADHD, or they have concurrent diagnoses. And then the research shows that those kids that have that concurrent diagnosis, you treat that underlying sleep issue, they need a hell of a lot less medication. And what parent wouldn't want their kid to have
absolutely
the least amount of medication possible? And I guess it all comes down to that. It's the quality of the sleep. They might be in bed for 12 hours, but if you're not getting into those deep, restorative, full sleep cycles, essentially because you're in this chronic fight-flight response, so your brain kind of like, well, it's safer to stay up in this light sleep, which means that obviously it's not as restorative, but also sometimes you have trouble staying asleep because you're in light sleep, then you essentially wake up exhausted. And those, you know, particularly in early childhood, infancy and early childhood, those are the formative years where like that all those, that neuroplastic, I mean, we're always neuroplastic, but we're just, so much is happening in the brain.
Development.
The foundations. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it's an Aussie study, a longitudinal study done of 11,000 kids, which looked at concentration, behaviour, emotion and interpersonal skills. And they found that kids that had at least 6 months of sleep-disordered breathing were more likely at 7 years of age to demonstrate some behavioural or emotional problems. So essentially saying like, yes, this does affect all those aspects and affects school performance. It's so multifaceted. It's not just like, oh, they might not be getting deep sleep. It's there's, you know, hormonal things like human growth hormone, iron, all these types of things that are affected by how we breathe.
Yeah, which is huge. Yeah. And it's something that, you know, these are all things that we are not taught. Again, like sleeping, we're not taught how to sleep. It's just assumed that we know how to sleep or breathe, the two key functions that keep us alive. And so it's really important that we do our own research and put things on the radar and really dive deep into understanding what's going on in the human physiological state for us as individuals, because when it comes to sleep is very personalized. We all know that. And it's no different to when it comes to any of these other things like mouth breathing, it's a personalized, individualized thing. So you need to understand it and do your own research as well to know how it's going to impact you. And by making some of these changes, we can then get such better quality sleep that's going to make us feel better overall. And when it comes to to children and infants and babies, it's going to help them in their development. So this is the key difference between an adult mouth breather and a child mouth breather, is that it's affecting children's development as well. You know, so that's why we need to really address it.
Get onto it as soon as you can. And obviously any surgical intervention you do does carry risk with anything. And so lots, you know, depending on where you sit on that, many parents are like, oh, I don't really want to do anything about it. What, will they outgrow it? And Dr. David McIntosh, the ENT, basically says they might not, but, you know, it boils down to like how much crap sleep do you want to, you know, like
endure
what's happening? Yeah. Until they grow out of it. Like they might grow out of it in terms of their airway gets bigger so it can cope with those tonsils or those adenoids. But what's happened in the meantime? Personally, I'm for early intervention, whatever I can do for my kids to maximize their growth development quality and mood. Yeah. I'm all for it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Maybe, Tash, you can talk to us. So your business is Sound Asleep Baby, and you are there as a consultant and do training in this space. So if people were interested in, you know, if this sparks a bit of interest where somebody's thinking, oh, this is something I need to explore a bit further, they can reach out and contact you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I do, obviously, like my intervention is sleep, but it's basically we want to look at the whole picture. It's not just like, well, how are you getting your kid to sleep and how long are they sleeping? It's like, well, is there stuff going on? So it's very much a holistic assessment, looking at feeding, so milk and food and sleep and just kids overall. And then let's look at sleep and what are all those things feeding into that? And this is the steps that we need to take. So here's, you might need some behavioural support, but we also might need to do X, Y, Z to support that. And sometimes we really need to do the XYZ first before there's any behavioral intervention.
Is that done on Zoom? Do you do Zoom consultations? Or so if somebody was interested in seeking out further, what happens in that, to sort of talk us through the process?
I do an intake process, so just via email, where it's a big holistic questionnaire, and then I get photos sent through so I can assess the face, and then a videos of feeding, and then we do Zoom or phone, or if in Perth, I can come and do in-person consults at your home as well, to get a really good picture of what's going on. But the lots of videos and photos are, I guess, when I can't see you in person.
Great. Yeah. If you were to leave our listeners with the top three tips of what to do, I know we've sort of covered this off throughout, but to leave people with those sort of top three tips around what to look at doing, obviously they're going to seek some advice. So first of all, they're going to diagnose.
So the videos and photos are number one. Number two is finding a professional that will listen, and number three is if you'd notice it, do something about it. And I guess coming back to that, will they grow out of it? Look, maybe, maybe not, but all parents want the best for their kids, and if you've identified it early on, then do something about it. Do what you can. And it's like you touched on before, it's certainly a process, and just because like you remove adenoids doesn't necessarily mean you know how to breathe through your nose. And just because, like, if you've had for 4 years, if your little one has had an open mouth rest posture and they've mouth breathed, just because you take the tonsils and the adenoids out doesn't mean that their mouth knows where to sit or their tongue knows where to sit. So there is a whole process behind it. So it's a staged approach, and get onto it as soon as you can, because it's not a quick fix, basically.
Absolutely.
So you could, do what you can in stages along the way, from my perspective.
I absolutely agree. And I think that, you know, being somebody that's experienced it a little bit, it's certainly something that I think that, as you said, we're only helping, you know, we want to do the best for our children, and we have this opportunity while they are young and pliable and malleable to make these changes and do it now rather than waiting till they hit their teenage years or beyond. And it's not to say that you can't do this in the teenage years. You absolutely can. But if 100%. You catch it earlier, then that's a better situation.
Yeah, because then you've slept better for longer of your life, and that can only be good news.
Absolutely. Like,
sleep and breath are everything.
Everything. Everything.
You're not alive without it.
That's right. If only we just focus on those two things and imagine what our lives would be like. Well, Tash, thanks so much for joining us today. I've really appreciated all of your advice, and it's so nice to know that there are people really focusing on this, because I really feel it is so important, and certainly an area to be a growing area of concern. But the great thing is there's so many things that we can do to make the changes.
Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody wants to find out some more or get in touch with you, we'll we will include it in the show notes, but you can be reached at Sound Asleep Baby is your Instagram handle.
Sound Asleep Baby AU is me.
And then
the website's just www.soundasleepbaby.com.au.
Perfect. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
If anybody wants to get some more information, head to the show notes and get in touch with Tash.
Thank you. And thanks for helping me educate.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for listening to The Goodnight Show. If you're keen to learn more about our guests or any of the topics we've spoken about today, hop on over to the Goodnight Co. closed Facebook community group or check us out at thegoodnightco.com.au. And if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on your favourite podcast provider by searching The Goodnight Show. And if you love what you're hearing, don't forget to leave us a glowing review. Thanks, everyone.